and welcome to the Open Labour podcast. My name's Tom Hinchcliffe and I am hosting on my own today for only the second time ever because James is away battling a marginal seat in Leeds for Mayor's election. So I suppose I'll let him off this time. But with me today is somebody else battling a marginal seat in May. I'll be speaking later on with Ciarán O'Neill, who is a Labour candidate in Glasgow for the Scottish Parliament, about the challenges Labour faces in Scotland. We're going to be chatting about the upcoming May election, in which Scotland is able to vote for its local councillors, but also, crucially, members of the Scottish Parliament. It has been billed as the most important election in Scottish history, and Labour looks to make gains on the SNP and the Tories after the damning report into Nicola Sturgeon's handling of the allegations against former SNP leader and First Minister Alex Salmond. It's Anas Sarwar's first opportunity as Scottish Labour leader to show what he's all about. He says Labour will focus on what unites Scotland as a country, not what divides us, and has pledged to deliver a parliament that prioritises a national recovery plan after the pandemic. Of course, all this is going on under the shadow of a possible renewed push by the SNP for another independence referendum, and it's been quite a few months in Scotland, so we'll see what Ciarán has to make of it all. So with me now, I've got Open Labour co-chair and the person who is standing to be the next Scottish Labour and Cooperative MSP for Glasgow, Maryhill and Springburn, Ciarán O'Neill. Hello.
Hi, Tom. That was quite a mouthful there, mate.
It must be the longest intro sentence I've ever done, and it's definitely one of the longer titles. So if you do win, then it'll be a gobful for the speaker. But
they'll need to figure it out, won't they? There's longer constituencies than that.
Yeah, maybe. Well, ones that us English people probably can't even pronounce, to be honest. you submitted your papers yesterday to officially become Labour's candidate for Glasgow, Maryhill and Springburn. And tomorrow, you've got your virtual campaign launch with...
We're doing a virtual campaign launch tomorrow night with Angela Rayner, who's obviously deputy leader of the UK party, Jackie Bailey, who's deputy leader of the Scottish party, Shona Thompson, who is an absolutely phenomenal GMB activist that led the Glasgow women's strike, and Councillor Jill Brown, who's Scottish Labour's newest councillor, having beat the Tories and the SNP in a by-election in Glasgow last week. And I was very honoured to be her agent, and chuffed that she's supporting my campaign. She's returning the favour, I suppose.
Yes, I suppose. I mean, winning ways, star-studded lineup. There's no way you can lose.
Yeah, I know exactly. I mean, it would look really bad if I lost after, you know, having all these people coming and supporting me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well,
fingers crossed. But how has the campaign been going so far then? I mean, obviously, there's a lot that's gone on in the last few weeks. I explained it earlier on in the podcast, but can you just tell us how it's been going overall?
Yeah, I mean, one week there will be a quiet week in Scottish politics. It's just I've never known one for as long as I've been politically active. I mean, I've been a candidate. I was selected in September 2019, so, you know, we selected for some Scottish Parliament constituencies quite a while ago, and, you know, there's been a lot of highs and lows since, obviously. But now we're, you know, the short campaign basically officially starts today. Parliament, the fifth session of Parliament came to a close yesterday. So, you know, this is really where we need to up the ante. So it's also a really, really strange time to be having an election. You know, our activists are having to adapt, our campaign team are having to adapt to a totally different way of doing things than the way we normally would. You know, one of the strengths I think you find as a Labour Party activist is we have a campaign machine that will come out and it will do what it needs to do. Trying to adapt that to the world of COVID hasn't always been easy, but I think our team's done a good job. You know, we've tried to find new ways of engaging with voters. You know, phoning's obviously a big thing. You know, I'm spending a lot of time on the phones at the minute, and you know, the polls are pretty stark. There's no escaping that. The polls. But, you know, I'm speaking to people on the phone and it's people that have never voted Labour before in their puff or heart. If they did vote Labour, they haven't voted Labour in certainly for as long as I've been alive. And they're coming to us now for a whole host of reasons. And also I think this is something that people maybe outside of Scotland and probably even outside of Glasgow don't get, is that, you know, obviously it's most places, you know, where, for example, where I'm standing, it's a straight fight between Labour and the SNP. The sort of people that, you know, that that are voting SNP, quite a lot of them voted Labour for a very long time, and they don't see, you know, it's not that hard for them to switch. So I think there's a really crucial group of voters who, you know, just depending on events and what may happen and how things are going, there's not that stark a difference in terms of between voting SNP or Labour. So I think our job, my job certainly in Glasgow and Ireland Springburn, is to reach out to those people and set out why this time on the 6th of May, they should, if they think Scotland needs a better government and also needs a better opposition, they need to make it both votes Labour.
Yeah. I mean, so of course,
that's where we're at the minute, I suppose.
Yeah, it's as I say, it's been a crazy year. And have the Lib Dems been around yet with their it's a battle between the SNP and Lib Dems in Glasgow? I'm sure they'd have something to say about
the one thing that's really reassuring about a Scottish election campaign is that Willie Rennie, the leader of the Scottish Lib Dems, does absolutely crackpot photo ops. That's what he's known for. So that'll keep us all entertained. I think today he was on the shores of the Queen's Ferry Crossing with a large, a massive sunliner, trying to read a book to a child. What that's meant to represent, I don't know, but it keeps us all going. The Lib Dems will have their bar charts. I think I saw just north of me in Strathkelvin and Bairdsden with my mate Carl McNally as the candidate. I think the Lib Dems put out a bar chart for a different election, so only the Lib Dems can win here. I'm like, that's for a different constituency, a different election to a different parliament. The Liberals are going to be the Liberals. We just have to accept that and treat them with the respect and the sincerity they deserve.
They're like that weird mate in a pub, aren't they? Pubs,
yeah.
do you remember pubs?
Pubs.
Now, is that weird mate in a pub that just kind of goes on and on and on in the corner and you just kind of leave him to it? The Lib Dems.
I'm sure they represent something and believe in something. I've just never, realised what that is.
Yeah, I don't really quite know either, to be honest, half the time. But it is a strange one. And you said the other day that this is the most important election in Scotland's history. Why do you think that? I mean, educate us.
The Parliament was established in 1999. So this is the election where, the people that have grew up with the institutions of devolution are coming of age. So I do think this election. I mean, it's not just me or Labour. That's every party saying that's the most important issue, most important election in Scotland's history, definitely in the history of devolution, because fundamentally it's about where do you think Scotland's future should be? What's the sort of country we want to build, rebuild, whatever the terminology we want to use as we recover from COVID. I think that's why, it's the most important election because there's a lot at stake. What's the sort of route in our recovery from this pandemic, and are we going to return to the old way of doing things? Are we going to say, no, that didn't work, we're going to try something different? Are we going to use the powers of our parliament to actually try and make a difference? Because I think up until now, I think a lot of people feel like let down by devolution. If you go back, so it was obviously Parliament celebrated its 20th anniversary in 2019, and if you listen to Donald Dewar, who was obviously the first ever First Minister, Labour First Minister, obviously, speaking at the Day of the Parliament, talking about, this is more than, a building, it's how we carry ourselves, it's not, the Scottish Parliament isn't an end, it's a means to greater ends. And I think that spirit, that sort of radical passion, I just don't feel it's there. So from my point of view, as somebody who genuinely believes that devolution is the best form of government suited to the people of Scotland, and indeed I hope for very soon people across these islands, when Labour can win an election and make it happen. I think it's really, really important, because I think what happens, particularly in Scottish politics, we became so obsessed with binaries. You're either, a hardcore unionist that, believes that this far and no further, in fact, should probably, roll back devolution, or, you're a nationalist and your only option is, a sort of, the equivalent would be a WTO Brexit, I suppose, would be the terms. It's the only way you can, build a better country as we you know, a growth commission independence, which would be absolutely terrible for working people in Scotland. You know, it would be a, you know, a programme of, you know, austerity and privatisation that would make Margaret Thatcher cringe. And I just don't think that people in Scotland have to accept either of those choices. I do generally think there is a better way. And to be honest, I think it's only the Labour Party that offers that.
Mm. Do you think that, you said about the great successes of devolution and things like that, do you think Labour have suffered in Scotland not only because of the old argument that we took it for granted, but as well the massive inequalities that still exist in Scotland? Do you think that has held Labour back to an extent because they were in government up there for so long?
Yeah, well, I mean, we were in government. We were in government for two terms here, and I think there was a lot of good. And I think also, you know, Labour at a UK level, you know, half child poverty. So I think there's a lot to be proud of. But yeah, of course, there's. I mean, I could rhyme off plenty of things that the last both UK and Scottish Labour governments could have done that were better. Mm. You know, I mean, I was in primary school at the time, so I wasn't involved in discussion. but there is definitely, you know, a lot more that could be, and there were mistakes that could be made. You know, there was problems with when the parliament was established. You know, there was a lot of controversy, you know, over things like the building. And, you know, I think that took a lot of the energy and the hope out of it. It took a while. And then in 2007, you know, a sort of reinvigorated SNP came along with, just quite policies that were popular, and they won by one seat. And ever since, Labour's failed to regain. So I think the way I'm looking at it is, you know, what's best, who's got the best plan for Scotland. I mean, you look at the things that Anas, our new leader's talking about, you know, a national recovery plan. I do think that's absolutely critical to building a better country after all of this. And speak to people on the phones, I do think people are agreeing. And I also think after 14 years of SNP government and, you know, all the problems that's came with that, whether it's the critical underfunding of local councils. So in Glasgow, where I live, you know, the city has effectively been robbed of funding for over a decade, and that's always hard, but it's really starting to bite now. You know, the city's roads, our bin services, despite the hard work of council staff, you know, the cracks are really, really showing. In a couple of weeks, the whole world is coming to Glasgow for COP26.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm as proud a Glaswegian as I am a Scot, you know. But the city is basically falling apart in some ways because of underinvestment, and because, you know, there is a government in Edinburgh that has this ideological obsession with not properly funding and resourcing or even respecting, you know, local democracy and local decision making. So that's one of the things we keep, you know, let's say Labour did just win a by-election in the West End of Glasgow. And I should point out that is not a denizen of Labour support. You know, we came third there last time, and you know, we won it last week. Jill Brown, who was our remarkable local candidate, beat the Tories and the SNP on a very clear message that Glasgow deserves better. You know, I was at the count. You know, I was Jill's agent. You know, I have been to more counts. I can tell when people are surprised by a result. I'm not going to repeat what I said when I saw the result, because you'd have to bleep it out. But, you know, I think that shows the strength of feeling about this. You know, the city deserves better.
Yeah, well, hopefully that dissatisfaction is as widespread as possible for May's elections. I mean, it was an amazing result. I did see it on... I obviously don't know the ins and outs of Glaswegian Scottish politics or anything like that, but I did see it, and I was surprised just to see any Labour gain, to be honest, with being third last time and things like that. But when it comes to May's elections, obviously we have got the whole issue of building back better and whatever they say about COVID and the post-pandemic recovery, economically as well as in health. But obviously if the SNP win a clear majority again, is there the spectre of a second referendum in people's sights?
Yeah, well, I think that's obviously a complicated question. And, you know, from the SNP's point of view, you know, they've had a mandate for a second independence referendum since, you know, they lost the last one. I say this as somebody that voted yes in 2014 and has, you know, I've certainly been on a bit of a political journey. If you told me when I voted yes in 2016 that in 2021 I'd be a Labour Party candidate for the Scottish Parliament, I would not have believed you. But life is a wonderful and surprising thing. I mean, fundamentally, whether or not there is ever another you know, constitutional referendum on Scotland's place in the UK is up to the people of Scotland. And, you know, that's just the basics of democracy. But I do think, you know, speaking to people on the phones, even people who are absolutely passionate, and, you know, at the end of the day, I respect people that believe in independence. You know, people believe in that for a whole host of reasons. Some of it's ideological, some of it's cultural. You know, you've got to engage in good faith with people, and I've always tried to do that. You know, I do think a lot of the reasons that people want independence is because they want to build a better, more fairer society, and they don't think that's achievable through the UK. Now, I would say the reason for that is, and particularly why there's such high support among, you know, people my age for a second independence referendum and Scotland, is because, you know, for most of our lives when we've, you know, been, well, not been kids basically, we've been under a Tory government that we didn't vote for. Just like people in Leeds, just like people in Manchester, yeah, and in, yeah, Cardiff, or, you know, and loads other, in London, you know, so it's not just a problem that, you know, Scotland is not unique in having a government it doesn't vote for. So I think that's why, you know, like the campaign that Open Labour's leading at the minute, or helping to lead around Labour for a New Democracy, is absolutely crucial. And, you know, a wide, you know, complete, you know, I want us to win the next election. But I genuinely believe, you know, we can only win that if we win back seats in Scotland. We're only going to win back seats in Scotland if we have a bulletproof plan for how we're going to drag the constitution of the UK into the 21st century kicking and screaming. Now, obviously, we did a fair whack of that in the 90s, but not nearly enough. And, you know, that plan has to, you know, obviously, Keir set up this constitutional commission that's Gordon Brown involved. That's great, but we also need more than that. And if the party at a UK level does not realise the importance of this, you know, I wrote for this in Labour List, I think in response to John Speller, who's a Labour MP, going, oh, you know, people aren't interested in the hunt. And I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, power and where it lies and who wields it really, really matters. And it matters to people that should be Labour voters. You know, there's only so many more times I can go to people's door and say, oh, if you vote Labour, we'll get rid of the Tories and, you know, everything will be great. We've failed to do that. And we've failed to do that because we haven't set out a plan about how, you know, I think it's Robin Cook had this quote in an ERS, but, you know, I'm not willing to accept a system of government where every 30 years we can beat the Tories and then govern in the exact same way. You know, it's a rigged system that's stacked in the favour of a right-wing minority. So let's change that when we win. And I hope, you know, and I'll certainly work very hard to make sure we do play my bit to make sure we win the next general election. So it's that. But coming back to the issue, and I think if we can demonstrate that, then the issue of, you know, referendums in Scotland, you know, isn't that big a deal. And when I speak to people, like I said, even the most passionate advocates for Scotland being independent don't think that the time to have a referendum is when we're still coming out of this pandemic. And I think that's why, you know, Anas Sawar, our leader, has been very clear that the priority of the next parliament should be in COVID recovery, not a referendum. And I appreciate not everyone's going to agree with that, and that's totally fine. You know, we live in a democracy. But I do think, you know, when you ask people what their priorities are, you know, making sure that people have jobs, making sure that public services are strong, you know, investing in protecting their NHS, and independence isn't very high up the list. Now, there's some things that are further, you know, I think one of the polls showed that housing wasn't a priority. You know, housing's a massive issue, particularly in, you know, when I'm seeking to represent. So, you know, I'm not going to say it's, you know, independence doesn't matter. You know, it does. The constitution does matter to people, and Labour has to engage in good faith with that discussion and come forward with what our progressive alternative would be.
I'm curious, what do you get on the doorstep, well, not on the doorstep, on the telephone at the minute? When it comes to talking through, you get someone that won't vote Labour because they want an independent Scotland. Issue, you say the cultural, sometimes economic, sometimes practical, and sometimes just not. What is the most common issues that you get that are linked to independence?
Well, I think
a better housing or something like
that? Yeah, no, I do think people generally, like, people have a... You know, they want a better, fairer country, and they think the only way the quickest way to achieve that is through independence. And you know, the fact is that is not true, because the blueprint for independence is set out in the SNP's Growth Commission. It's frankly quite scary. So, you know, when I speak to people and say, oh, you know, I would vote Labour, but I believe in independence, I'm like, well, why do you believe in independence? You go, well, because, you know, I want my kids to grow up in a, you know, I mean, a lot of it comes down to the Tories and how they don't like having a right wing government that is, you know,
so far away as well.
And you know, particularly this one led by, but you know, I think people look at Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson, you know, the leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party, is the biggest mascot for Scottish independence. You know, better than Nicola Sturgeon, better than Alex Salmond. He's an absolute gift. The man is a buffoon. He has absolute contempt for devolution. And the sooner we drag him kicking and screaming from Downing Street, the better. But I have a funny feeling the Tories will do that to him before the next election.
Yeah, I think that as well. I mean, he said he's coming up to Scotland, didn't he, to shore up the anti-independence vote, which I'm sure will go down very well. Was it Farage when he got barricaded in a pub in Glasgow?
Yeah, there's a pub across from the Parliament called Kilderkin, and I think Farage got locked in there. But the idea that Boris has got into this habit now, where he'll come up and he'll go, you know, oh, I'm here to say, you know, I think he made himself Minister for the Union when he became Prime Minister, and it's sort of like this thing that particularly the Scottish Tories, you know, in 2016 it was vote Ruth Davidson for a stronger opposition. Ruth Davidson, who's now off to the unelected House of Lords, I'm sure she'll enjoy her time there, leaving elected politics. But you know, it's this thing that party isn't there anymore. It's been replaced by a tub thumping, you know, lowest common denominator British nationalist cranks that are led by quite an inept referee. I think that's the politest way of describing Douglas Ross. So, you know, I think a lot of people that maybe, I do think the Tories are in for a kicking at this. And it's nothing short of what they deserve in Scotland, because over the last 5 years, they've offered absolutely nothing. They've achieved nothing. All they've done is do this sort of Ian Paisley routine of going no or never every possible opportunity. And it's done nothing to help the people of Scotland. And I think a lot of people, you know, I'm speaking to people that have voted Tory for a very long time that are now voting Labour. Because, you know, they want an opposition that will, you know, actually deliver. And, you know, I think the work of Scottish Labour MSPs over this Parliament's been remarkable. For a party in third place to have changed, you know, whether it was on, you know, things like repealing the Draconian Football Act, delivering protections for shop workers, world-leading period poverty legislation. And, you know, I could talk all day about it, but I think, you know, the work of Scottish Labour MSPs has been absolutely top drawer, and that's why we should have more Scottish Labour MSPs. I'd quite like to be one, obviously.
Less Tories. That's how you do it.
Well, it's just, you know, it's just the thing, you know, and that's it. And, you know, I think that message is connecting. You know, people see that the Labour Party in Scotland has been on a journey. You know, every single election since devolution, we have lost votes and we've lost seats. I'm really hoping that we can reverse the trend at this election and start to rebuild. And actually, you know, all we want to do is serve the communities that we're proud to call home. You know, I think Labour genuinely do have fantastic candidates all over the country. And they'd all be phenomenal. But at the core of it, all of these people, you know, they're absolutely committed to Labour values. But more importantly, they're committed to the places that they're trying to represent. They're, you know, they want to do a shift. They want to, because I think, you know, there used to be this thing, you know, they said, oh, in Scotland, you could put a Labour rosette on a donkey and it would get elected. And that basically feels what's happened with the SNP. You know, they're supplanted us at that and even excelled at it. So, you know, and that's that, you know, you talked about an SNP majority. I don't think an SNP majority is guaranteed, and an SNP majority wouldn't be good for Scotland, because the way the Scottish Parliament is designed, it is literally designed to not have a majority. So there's lots of checks and balances on, you know, minority government. Those all disappear when you have a plurality of seats. And the last time they had a majority, you know, they did bring in things like the Football Act. You know, they did ruthlessly cut council budgets. You know, I could list an endless number of things. So I think, you know, under no illusions, the SNP are on course to win this election. But Labour genuinely, I do think, need to be the largest opposition party, and the SNP cannot have a majority, because when they do, bad things happen. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I think there's obviously all these different, because of the haunt system, there's all these different sort of either ultra-unionist or ultra-nationalist parties popping up that are trying to game the system. But I think the best way of making sure that there's better government and better opposition in Scotland is to, you know, literally it's that simple, just make both vote Labour in both ballots.
How much do you think the Sturgeon-Salmond affair has affected their chance of winning a majority? Do you think it's actually put a serious dent in them, or do you think it's just...
Oh, I mean, obviously, this has been an ongoing saga for a number of years, and there's something quite unedifying about, you know, a former First Minister and a First Minister, you know, a party political spat in that level, you know, infecting our public debate, and you know, it's taken everywhere. And at the end, at the heart of all this, there are women that were let down by the government, and nobody's took responsibility for that. And that's if it, obviously, you know, there was a minute. The Ministerial Code investigation has ruled that James Hamilton's ruled that the First Minister didn't break the Ministerial Code. Okay, fine, we accept that.
Yeah, but it was briefed to the media, wasn't it, before that she had. Do you think that strengthened her in any way?
I think, you know, at the end of the day, this has been a psychodrama within the SNP it's been an internal debate, an argument within their party that, you know, and it's affected, you know, our institutions as a result. But, you know, I do think even though the ministerial code hasn't been broken, which is, you know, we accept that, I think the report says there are serious issues, and still nobody's taking responsibility. Not a single government minister, not a single senior official has said, I made a mistake here, I cost the taxpayer over £500,000, I'm going to do the right thing and tender my resignation.
Well, a party of government bringing the country into dispute like that, it's surely near on unforgivable. I mean, it does highlight their incompetence to govern, and whether the question is whether they're fit to govern at all. But you say someone should take accountability for it. Should Sturgeon resign over this?
Well, I mean, that's been that issue's been dealt with. I think the condition was that, you know, the ministerial code investigation, that's now not came through. And I actually think the sort of ham-fisted stupidness of the Tories in calling for a vote of no confidence before Nicola Sturgeon had even uttered a word at the parliamentary committee has made, you know, the First Minister look like a hero. But I think there was something, you know, she gave evidence to the committee for 8 hours, which is that's quite a shift to answer questions.
But at the end of the day, when you're
the head of government in Scotland, you know, you shouldn't, you know, accountability, you shouldn't be. And the way the SNP reacted, the SNP used it as a recruitment drive. You know, it was like, oh, Nicola's, you know, she's done so great, come and join us. And I think Jess Phillips said in question, you know, it was almost like she was at a gig. This is really serious. This is a committee, a special committee set up to investigate how the Scottish Government have botched complaints about sexual harassment. This isn't funny. This isn't lighthearted. Don't use it as a recruitment drive. And obviously there's been issues all through the process, but I mean, the matter has now been resolved. I do think, you know, speaking to people, there is still a bad smell around all this. And you know, I think people that have, you know, I spend a lot of time on the phones, like I say, speaking to lifelong SNP voters who will not vote for Nicola Sturgeon now as a result. They won't vote for her party. And that's for a range of reasons, but I think, you know, the fact that this situation is taking up, you know, at the end of the day, it's a substantial amount of public money that's been lost through willful incompetence of the government as an institution, and just nobody's thought, oh, I'll do the right thing and I'll take account, I'll be accountable. I think that we're in a really bad place in Scottish politics, and indeed across the UK, when you know, people in positions of public authority, you know, do things badly. You know, whether it's Margaret Ferrier who we all know what Margaret Ferrier did, or you know, I can list other examples, and you know, or Derek Mackay, for example, who's still an MSP and Margaret Ferrier's still an MP. We're in a really bad place when there's egregious breaches of trust. You should do the right thing. You should step aside and should make way for somebody that will you know, try and rebuild trust with the people you try to represent.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's whether it's financial or just moral with the sexual harassment claims. The government in Scotland, but their representatives in Westminster have let the party down. They've clearly let the country down. And to say they're supposed to be kind of flying the flag for independence in Westminster, they're not doing a very good job when they're, you know, make it embarrassing. I was going to say something else. Embarrassing themselves on a regular basis. And it's not just, I say, little things like getting the train when you've got coronavirus, but, you know, botching an investigation into sexual harassment, spending millions of pounds of taxpayers' money and misleading Parliament, it's surely going to eventually catch up with you. I mean, I know people say Nicola Sturgeon's untouchable and things like that sometimes, but no one can surely.
Well, I mean, all this has seen a massive dent in our, and you know, what people, this is all polling, and you know, I'm quite sceptical of polls and focus groups, but you know, at the end of the day, this is how the political world operates. They have taken a hit, and like I say, you know, this has left a bad taste in people's mouth. You know, people, and also I think it's just after 14 years of, you know, being in government, I think stuff has built up, and I think stuff's came to light that it just comes across as, you know, sleazy. I can't think of a, you know, another word. You know, there's real issues here, and you know, there's questions of accountability and transparency that are, you know, that need to be answered, and they haven't been. But we're about to enter an election campaign, and I'm sure that you know, we'll set out what we think has to change. But like I say, we'll say this all too, Scotland desperately needs a better government, but it needs a better opposition that can hold the government to account, because all we've had is a Tory party that is obsessed with being seen as the saviours of the union, and obsessed with getting a political scalp rather than actually trying to achieve something in opposition.
It actually reeks of what they do in Westminster constantly, which is just trying to get people into a culture war.
Yeah.
It happens, the Churchill statue, it happened there. It happened with the police bill recently, mm-hmm. the Sarah Everard case, and it's happening in Scotland as well. And I just think it's not just disgraceful, but it also doesn't necessarily work for very long. It might work. It worked in 2019 against Jeremy Corbyn in a general election, but I can't see it washing for that long when the substance of your arguments just aren't there. I mean, it reminds me of, well, I say reminds me like I was alive, but Churchill in after the war.
I moisturise a lot.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's Botox. No, after the war, when he came back with no policies and climatically beat him and things like that, I can just see that happening to them at some point, I'll be glad when it does. But it happens to the SNP as well.
Yeah, well, I think it is happening. You know, I think there is only one way for the SNP to go now, and that is down. I'm not going to say it's happening overnight, but I do think, you know, things. I think there's a space in our politics in Scotland for a you know, a progressive party like the Labour Party to try and rebuild. And all, you know, it's also just a fact, you know. I mean, the first leaders debate is next week, which is really, really soon, a lot of a little good. And Anas is going to be up there with the other party leaders. And I think, you know, then we'll see, you know, what a better Scotland could look like. You know, at the end of the day, all Douglas Ross, who's the leader of the Scottish Tories, will say is, SNP bad, SNP bad, you know. When in fact we're in this position because of the absolute, I dare say, the Tory party, and it's in about, you know, I think in the 90s, when, you know, John Smith was leader, he was on a Question Time panel, and he said there's two legs sawing away there's two saws sawing away at the legs of the union. One's the SNP, which obviously, you know, are nationalists and don't believe in the UK as a political unit. And then the other's the Tory party, which is too stupid and is trying to preserve a situation that is untenable. And that's where we're in this position again. So we don't need yes or no. We need a clear programme of, you know, reform, and you know, Labour being the natural party of that. So I'm hoping that, you know, we'll see when this leaders debate takes place next week, that Anas will set out the details of Scottish Labour's national recovery plan and how we're going to not just, you know, hope to play our part in rebuilding the country, but how we regain the trust of people who we've lost.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Anas Sawa, I mean, I think he's a breath of fresh air. Obviously, this is from the outside, very much from the outside looking in, but he just seems a lot more dynamic, a lot more modern. I'm not trying to slag off Richard Lennon, because he's a good man, and he's never... I wasn't a big...
He's also for your neck of the woods.
yeah, I know. I just thought it was a bit of a strange leadership, to put it lightly. From the bits I saw of him, it wasn't just the fact that he's basically from Yorkshire. It was the fact that he just... I don't know, he never looked like... a first minister in waiting. He never looks like he would have been the leader. And as I say, I know I am slagging him off now, but I'm not. I'm more focused on what Anas can bring. So I don't know what you feel when it comes to.
I voted for Richard in 2017, and I've got a lot of time and a lot of respect for him. He's a thoroughly decent, principled guy. And you know, I think a lot of the people that voted for Richard voted because they thought that there had to be You know, first, I would have just rather that Kezia Dugdale never resigned. I do generally think if Kezia was still a leader, we would be in a much better place. But unfortunately, Kez stood down, and then obviously events took place. I mean, like being leader of the Scottish Labour Party is not an easy gig. I think that's why we've had, I think, 10 leaders in the past 20 years, while the SNP have had 3. So I think there's something to be said. So Anas is obviously, and Anas won a clear mandate from the membership. So far, he's been very good. So he's obviously, he'll be there for a while. He has my full support in that. But Richard's a good guy. I've got a lot of time for him. But I mean, it just didn't work out, unfortunately, you know, and it's a shame, you know. I think, you know, when you put your trust in somebody to lead your party, when people put hope into, you know, the leader of a movement, and it doesn't work out, it can hurt. It's quite, you know, I would have much rather it didn't end the way it did, but you know, that's just how it's went, and we you just have to hope that now we're in a stronger place to rebuild, to arrest the decline, I think would be the term, and make sure that this is the first election in the history of devolution where the Scottish Labour Party doesn't just manage decline, but actually starts to build back. And I think Anas is the right guy to do that.
I think people underestimate the importance of the Scottish Labour leader's role overall, because you know, it's a springboard. These elections are surely a springboard to winning in 2024 UK-wide.
Absolutely.
I'm a firm believer that Labour needs to win Scotland if they're going to win a general election.
Ian Murray, and I'm going to be wrong, I'm going to get this wrong, but Ian Murray always says there's basically, you know, we always talk about the red wall, right, in the north of England. Well, in 2015, there was another red wall, and it was the central belt of Scotland. And, you know, we need to talk about how we win back that. Now, admittedly, a lot of this is us. You know, we need to get better, but we also need, you know, we also need help from comrades across the UK and in different ways. But I think, you know, Ian Murray, I think his line is, you know, if Labour doesn't win back 17 seats in Scotland, the swing it would need for us to get a majority of one would mean we'd have to win Jacob Rees-Mogg's seat in North East Somerset.
Well, the best will in the world,
I don't think that's going to happen. So, you know, Scotland, the road, and you know, we say the road for Keir Starmer and Angela Rayner to number 10 goes right through Glasgow, goes right through the central belt of Scotland. And you know, that's why I'm delighted that Angela's supporting my campaign launch tomorrow. But you know, Angela said before COVID, you know, she was going to move up to Scotland. You know, Angela gets it, and Angela's, you know, Angela's been up here and went for visits in the constituency, and you know, even though she's English, she has so much in common with you know, the people. You know, we went to Alive and Kicking, which is an older people's centre in Springburn, a really, really fantastic communities facility that has done so much for the area in Ballonick and around there. And she was chatting, and people just said, like, she's brilliant. She's like one of us. And I think, you know, we need to do that. But basically, all of this goes back. If we don't, you know, have a clear plan, we don't have a clear message. And I say this a lot. You know, I do generally think 2024 is the last chance to win for the UK. You know, if Labour can't win, I don't know what happens after that. I generally don't, which is why it's so important that we get our act together and we're in a position to win this election. And, you know, that has to start with these elections in May, because we need a strong group of Labour MSPs elected to the Parliament that will show the difference that Labour can make, even when in opposition. Because I think for a lot of people, a Labour government, it's not something that they have, even though they might have been around when it was there, it's not something they remember. You know, we have to get away from this thing where the Tories are the natural party of government. A lot of that's down to the broken electoral system, which I've already said we need to change. But, you know, we do need, you know, the first past the post made the last century a Tory century. You know, Labour's been around for over 120 years and we've only been in power for 33 years out of them. That's not good enough. So we do need to get our act together. And, we need to win this election. There's no two ways about it.
I mean, been in, no pressure then, by the way, but been in power for such a short space of time over such a long period, It gives you chance.
Look, in that time, look at all the great, and you know, it's always like this, it's like, oh, he's never, I'm like, well, I always think the job of a Labour government's to come in and then totally change the country in a way that a Tory government would never. So NHS, a perfect example. Devolution's a perfect example. You know, the minimum wage. You know, I could list all these great things we've done.
But the longer we're out of government, obviously, yeah. This is obviously so simple. It gives them the opportunity to unravel all the good work we do. Yeah. And it gets more and more serious as it goes along, because we slip into just being, and this is UK, Scotland, everywhere, the Labour movement just slips into being used to being in opposition and shouting from the sidelines, yeah, where we can actually do nothing, as people know. But right, we'll just finish on this because we don't want to go on too long and distract you from your campaign. But when it comes to Nicola Sturgeon and the vote of no confidence, everything that's surrounded at a minute, you said earlier on SNP are on course to win this election. Is the realistic aim then to beat the Tories into third? And does Labour have to wait until Nicola Sturgeon goes to have a realistic possibility of winning?
I mean, there's no point me pretending that, you know, on after May the 6th and Starmer is going to be First Minister, we'll be the largest party. That's not going to happen. What this election's about is saying that, you know, Scotland needs a better government and a better opposition. You know, it's that simple. So the message of this election is every single vote cast for Labour will help elect Labour MSPs and constituencies and regions across the country, who will be proactive, who will be progressive, who will fight for what really matters. And, you know, to be honest, I don't really think whoever leads the SNP matters. I do think they have absolutely no idea who's there after Sturgeon. Like, they do not have a successor.
I think the Tories are very similar with Boris, aren't they, at the minute, with Boris Johnson?
Yeah, there is nobody else, you know, and they've got, I think that ties in with the arrogance of the SNP, and that, I think that's why they, you know, they were so uncooperative with the parliamentary inquiry into the harassment complaints, because anything that could have threatened Nicola would threaten them as a party. So the plan at this election is to make this the first election where Scottish Labour improves its position rather than declines, and to, you know, elect Labour MSPs across the country who will be champions for the local community, but also, you know, be there in the Parliament, being the progressive voice that the Parliament needs, being the conscience of the Parliament, if you like. Because right now, what SNP MSPs will vote through anything that they're told to. They've got this pack mentality that I've never seen like any other, you know. I remember never being more angry in my whole political life than watching the Parliament debate emergency coronavirus law and voting down things like banning evictions, vote down things like, you know, collective bargaining in the private care sector where you know, the absolute epicentre of this pandemic take place. And that comes back to the point why we cannot trust the SNP with a majority, and the only party that's strong enough to stop that is the Labour Party. So, you know, whether people have voted lifelong Labour or never voted Labour for in their life, if they care about the future of the country and, you know, they want things to get better and they want a Parliament focused on recovery, there really is only one option, I'm going to say it again, and that's to vote Labour in the constituency ballot, regardless who your candidate is, and vote Labour, Scottish Labour, in the regional list.
Policy, not personalities, I think we can say. So yeah. Everyone in Scotland, we actually do get a few listeners in Scotland. So vote Labour. I'm sure you are doing already because obviously you listen to this podcast, but if you're not, you need to take a look at yourself.
And get your early vote and your postal vote, because they're absolutely crucial.
Absolutely. Vote early, vote often. Kieran O'Neill, thank you very much for coming on today. It's been decent. It's better than usual when I'm with James, because James does a lot of the talking and sounds far more intelligent than me. So this is good. Thanks, Kieran.
No danger, mate. That's class.